I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to A Woman's View here on KSL News Radio. And I appreciate these three women so much. Andrea Himhoff is here, senior advisor on the Becky Edwards for U.S. Senate campaign. Cassie Bingham is with me, program director at UVU's Center for Social Impact. And Dr. Delana Tonks is with me, principal of Mountain Heights Academy. I need to ask you about this because it's sticking with me. And that is the comments that were made by Representative Lauren Boebert about Representative Ilhan Omar. And I know that politicians snipe. Politicians say things about each other. But this, I think, is in a different category. She said, and I saw the video of it, she said that she was in an elevator with Representative Omar, but that she felt safe because at least Representative Omar didn't have a backpack. And so just to make sure that everyone in our audience understands, Ilhan Omar, of course, is Muslim. And that was a direct reference to saying, basically saying, well, I didn't feel like she was going to be a suicide bomber because at least she didn't have a backpack. That to me was like calling a black person the N-word. I just think that was as horrible of a thing that you could say about someone's religion as a racist comment that you could make about someone's race. I was just, and then in the same event, she called her jihad something. And then afterwards, they talked on the phone, but there was no real apology, no public apology made. So this is just, I don't know. It's not sitting well with me because I don't think this is regular sorts of back and forth between politicians. This feels different in some sort of profound way. Andrea, you're in politics. Am I right? Is this different in a profound way? Or is this just, Manda, politics is a blood sport. Get used to it. Help me understand.
Oh, Amanda. I mean, I know that Lauren Boebert and Ilhan Omar have both said some incendiary comments, you know, in the past. But these particular comments from Representative Boebert, they were designed to prey on people's fears and prejudices around Muslims. And that's not about politics, you know? So yes, this is different from political sniping. And I think the sad truth is that in this moment in time, incendiary, extremist, and even bigoted comments rile people up and get them donating to political campaigns. It's to me tragic. I mean, I think it is to most people. It's very unsettling, and it should fall on elected officials to be real leaders, right? To hold the high ground and be models of civility and respect, even with ideological differences. But that's just not, unfortunately, always the case, which means it is up to us as voters to choose not to donate to those kinds of politicians and not to vote for them, because we really hold a lot of power to curb that kind of extremism and hatred in politics. We have to remember that as voters.
Mm. Dr. Tonks?
I agree with what Andrea has said. It's interesting to read the different news outlets. I'm sure you're all familiar with the graphic that has, you know, the far right and the far left and in the middle. And, you know, to be a savvy consumer, it's good practice to read some from the middle and the right and the left so that you get a good sense of what's happened here. I don't know how this can be spun in a way that is okay. However, and I think it was a low blow to score political points and for fundraising and to rile people up. But rhetoric like that is frightening. It leads to actions, and hate speech leads to hate acts. And I can't condone that. And again, I agree with what Andrea said, that we vote with our feet. We vote at the ballot box and we choose people who can elevate speech. And we do have some amazing politicians who have been able to remain above the fray. You don't ever hear anything like this coming out of some of our politicians. Senator Romney doesn't say stuff like this. Representative Curtis doesn't say stuff like this. So I know it can be done, and we can focus on elevating our speech as by how we vote.
I was just reading Chris Christie's book, and he talks in his book about how, you know, the Republican Party has to let go of people who would drag the party down. And I think this particular representative might be included in that group by trying to encourage this kind of anger and hatred. Back over to you, Cassie.
Yeah, you know, I think that, well, one, I'm a Black woman. And so I have lived experience with how psychologically crippling it can be to be in a workplace or some other place where you need to be seen with credibility and to be attacked based on your skin color or some other part of your identity that is regularly discriminated against. So obviously it hits a personal nerve with me. I also have worked with many, many Muslim people. I used to work in the Moria refugee camp in Greece for several months, and have seen women and children and men and full families and how they interact and how they are so much more alike the nuclear families that we see as normal or standard in the U.S. Than they are any bit different. And so just from a personal standpoint, I feel like it brings up like past trauma almost for me. I don't want to use that word too lightly. I know a lot of young people use that word a lot, but honestly, it feels like that. And I also think we'd be remiss to say that this rhetoric hasn't been amped up by the Donald Trump presidency. I am not going to say that bad political speech or even racist political speech started with him. It didn't. Even, you know, I can go back to the Clintons and say that when they used, you know, dog whistles like the war on drugs, oftentimes they were actually talking about war on Black people, right? If they said super predator, they were usually talking about Black people, right? However, the totally exposed rhetoric, not being challenged and then not being immediately censured by the political party that the person is from, in terms of being able to get away with saying jihad and, you know, they're not wearing a backpack, and even Donald Trump saying Mexicans are rapists and all sorts of things. This is something new. It's a new level. I don't think rhetoric is the same as policy. However, I do think that rhetoric 100% affects how people think, how they feel they're allowed to talk, how they feel they're allowed to treat other people. And it enrages me. And I think that it's completely wrong.
And yes, words have meaning. And they do. They affect human beings on a soul level. This discussion has been so helpful for me. I hope for our listeners as well. Our time is gone. I wish I had more time, because I could spend the whole day with the three of you. May I thank you for your time and ask you to please come back and see me again?
I'd love to, Amanda. This is great.
Thank you all so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, everyone, and I'll see you next week here on A Woman's View.